Support for WGTD comes from Jack and Drea, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, newly reimagined for 2019. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. More information at jackandrea.com. Jack and Drea, a proud supporter of WGTD's morning show. Happy to be. And we welcome you to the Wednesday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I'm very happy to be, for the second time this week, sitting across from one of the college presidents here in town, namely Dr. John Swallow, the president of Carthage College, where I am a member of the music faculty. And President Swallow is here along with Cameron Swallow, First Lady of Carthage College. And if I'm not mistaken, this is the first time we've actually had the two of them on together, but both of them have visited the morning show before. One of the reasons I thought it would be fun to have the two of them on together today is because this coming weekend is homecoming at Carthage, and there are all kinds of exciting and fun things to be talking about. But we also want to talk about one of the most important events over this upcoming homecoming weekend, namely a presentation that the two of them are going to make celebrating 150 years of Carthage women. That is, this marks the 150th anniversary of the first women to study at Carthage. And that is a long history, perhaps longer than at many other comparable institutions. And so we will get at least a sketch or a preview of some of what they are planning to share at this event, which will be Friday night, 7 p.m. in Carthage's Siebert Chapel, and just one of a number of exciting events that are happening all weekend long. So President John Swallow and Cameron Swallow, we welcome both of you to the morning show.
Glad to be here.
Thank you, Greg.
Good to have you here. It's very, very happy about this. So President Swallow, I wonder if you could say a word about the function of homecoming itself, not just at Carthage, but at nearly every institution of higher learning. In general, why do schools have homecoming, and why is it worth the time and trouble and resources and expense to make homecoming celebrations as sort of big and grand as they tend to be?
That's a great question, Greg. Colleges are multi-generational enterprises where we have graduates and parents who have been associated with the school on and off over what can be decades. And homecoming is meant to encourage that and embrace that and bring alumni back where they can celebrate with each other the years that they had together at Carthage, but also look toward the future to think what Carthage is now and what it can be. There's nothing like bringing people onto campus to see the latest buildings, to see the latest programs, and especially to interact with students and faculty. So that's the sort of programming that we aim to provide in a short weekend because people have to travel. So we certainly have a football game, we have other events, but it's really about building that community and sustaining that community over generations.
I'm just curious, the school where you were at previous to Carthage, what was homecoming like there? And do you sense any difference in the way it is celebrated at Carthage?
Well, at Sewanee, homecoming was really quite a weekend of activity. It seemed that every five-year reunion wanted to be in a separate space. My counterpart there would have to get in a golf cart and spend probably 5 minutes at each of 10 different events in the evening. I like what we do at Carthage to bring more people together for fewer events, but you're right, these things can be somewhat taxing if you're not a very social person.
Right. So tell us what you can about what goes on behind the scenes to kind of put all this together. And at Carthage, who is primarily responsible for coordinating this and making all of this work as well as it, generally speaking, does?
Well, the alumni office, and particularly our advancement office, which houses alumni, is the one that puts together homecoming. I'd say we have more and more offices putting on larger and larger events. We had our Aspire conference recently with over 80 events put on by the ostensibly the Aspire folks, but of course this is a partnership across campus. We have event planners, we have people who are trying to make sure that rooms are reserved, that we have enough parking, that we have enough signs, and I'm really proud that we're able to do this with sort of less and less fuss and more focus on helping provide a great experience for lots of people coming to campus. Mm.
Cameron Swallow, what has your experience been with homecoming? Now I'm losing track a little bit. Is this your third homecoming?
We're coming up on our third homecoming.
Right.
Well, with my Sewanee experience in the background, I was amazed to see the energy and artistry that the Greek and social organizations put into building floats for the homecoming parade. That was not part of our undergraduate experience. And to have all the fanfare and color and excitement of a parade, even if it's just going down College Drive for 100 yards, it's a spectacle that is really fun to see and be part of. And I'm looking forward to walking Watson, our Basset Hound, in the in the parade this weekend.
So it's a big weekend for Watson as well.
And I learned something that first homecoming is just how photogenic apparently I was. I've never thought of myself as particularly photogenic, but I walked by those floats and all sorts of students wanted to have a picture with me. And
so
this is one of these things you learn as a new college president.
Very good. So, as I said, one of the reasons why I thought it would be fun to have the two of you on is because you're going to be making a presentation together as part of the festivities on Friday. And this is, in many respects, the event that kind of kicks the whole thing off, and namely a presentation on the 150 years of Carthage women. So, first of all, President Swallow, maybe you can give us some idea of how the college has been kind of, I don't know, wrestling with this big landmark year and the kind of discussions that have occurred on how best to observe this and talk about it and celebrate it.
Well, when I first came to Carthage, I was deeply interested, and I continue to be deeply interested, in its history. And we have a book, I'll call it that, written by a former president, Harold Lentz, called The Miracle of Carthage. Mm. And so I was making my way through that. And the question occurred in my mind, when did women first enroll? It wasn't at the very beginning, but it didn't seem to be too long after that women were enrolled in Carthage. And I began to think that it might be that the first women enrolled in 1870, when the institution moved to Carthage, Illinois, from Springfield, Illinois.
I'd like to point out it was because I showed you a picture.
I have to give credit where credit is due. So Cameron was a crucial part of this process. And so that raised the question. And so we had to confirm that with the archives. And so going back through pictures and other records, it was true that there had not been women enrolled before 1870 in either Hillsboro or Springfield, Illinois. And there were women enrolled in 1870. Well, and if you're a college president and you see that there's something like 1870, and then you can take 2020 and subtract 1870 and get 150 years, well, now it's time to celebrate something. And so we're going to kick off this whole year on Friday, and this will be a year of events. It'll be a year of fundraising, a year of celebration. It was not clear to us when we first had this idea, but of course is clear to us now, that it also coincides in 2020 with 100 years of women's suffrage in the United States. Mm. So we're just delighted by that.
Yeah, there's a couple of landmarks that coincide on the calendar in a really lovely way. So you have spent some time in the archives then, it sounds like, or you and others assisting you in to try to kind of determine this. Just maybe as just a brief little sidelight, what exists that tells us the Carthage story from 150 years ago? I mean, I don't know how much you've actually been hands-on in the archives, but were they keeping significant records that are well preserved, or is some of what occurred at Carthage that far back sort of lost to the mists of time?
Oh, so not much is kept from then. So we do have some pictures, and we have indications of who was present in graduating classes. We have some old bulletins. But no, it's not that we have lots of material from the past.
Right. So not we don't have who exactly was registered and taking what classes. That would be a monumental archive if all that information occurred. But we know enough to know that this is when women began to first study at Carthage. What can you tell us about how distinctive that was? And maybe this is just going to be a general impression, but does it strike you as maybe at least mildly remarkable that there were women enrolled at Carthage as early as 1870?
Absolutely. You'll find a lot of institutions like our alma mater celebrating about 50 years now, so be on the lookout elsewhere.
Well, Yale and Harvard, or at least Yale, same year, they're celebrating 50 years, and and we look at Carthage celebrating 150. It really puts that into context.
Right.
So as best I can tell, Carthage was one of the first 50 private institutions that weren't already enrolling women, because they were all women, to decide to enroll women in the United States. And so, of course, there were the women's colleges, and then there were, at that time, lots of men's colleges. And so to be within the first 50 private schools is impressive. I will say that it seems to have been more of a Midwestern phenomenon than in other regions of the country. So there's something about the Midwest that's smart and forward-looking and practical, and so here we are.
For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking today with Dr. John Swallow, the president of Carthage College, and with Cameron Swallow, the first lady of Carthage, and we are talking today on the eve of yet another homecoming, and a homecoming which in this instance is going to celebrate something very special, namely, as we've just been talking about, 150 years of women at Carthage. And as a matter of fact, John and Cameron Swallow will be giving a presentation Friday night at 7 p.m. that will celebrate exactly that, 150 years of Carthage women. In fact, that's probably an important thing for us to say right off the bat, although maybe it's obvious to people, but you're not going to talk for an hour and a half about the women at Carthage 150 years ago. You're going to be talking about this rich history of a century and a half of, I would assume, various women who have played important roles in Carthage's history. Is that ultimately what you intend to do Friday night?
Well, I want to make it clear that it is not an event of just me and John talking for an hour on at 7 o'clock in the chapel on Friday night.
Oh, I think that'd be great, but that's not what it is.
There will be lots of people and lots of groups taking part in the event. And then there's a big party over in the library. The library is going to be transformed into a giant reception and party space for all the different ages and stages of homecoming to enjoy and mix and socialize and celebrate. Thanks. And see, there are exhibitions in the library, too, about different eras of women at Carthage.
Very good. So what is going to be shared? And as you thought about the way in which to kind of kick off this weekend and to highlight this, what was important to the two of you in terms of this particular story?
Well, telling the long story of Carthage women really as part of the long story of women in the United States. Understanding how some of those first women graduated and then went on to opportunities that were available to them at the time. We have women that were across the Midwest and West, some quite well known in the fields that they chose, and then seeing Carthage's evolution over time alongside opportunities for women evolving over time. So telling those stories all the way to today, where we have again, remarkable women with a wide variety of opportunities today that women didn't have in 1870.
Interesting. I was thinking about this the other day when the magazine arrived from my alma mater, which is Luther in Decorah, and they have just welcomed aboard their newest president. And this makes two presidents in a row at Luther that are women. And, of course, that is something that has not yet happened at Carthage. Carthage is not at this point had a woman as president, but there have certainly been a lot of women who have held very significant roles at Carthage and made a huge difference. And many of them, I get a sense, doing their jobs with great distinction at a time when probably it was uncommon for a woman to be the registrar or that sort of thing.
Well, there's a fantastic story, again, in The Miracle of Carthage, for anyone who wants to take a look at Carthage's long history. And that was 1951-1952. So when Morris Wee became president of Carthage, and again, this was Carthage, Illinois, he had been working previously with Ruth Wick. And he wished that Ruth Wick come to Carthage, Illinois as what was then a significant and unique role called vice president. There weren't lots of vice presidents then.
Hmm.
So he asked her to come and join him. And as a signal for how important it was to him and at the time, he wanted her to be formally inaugurated as vice president in somewhat similar fashion to the way he would be inaugurated as president. And he delayed his own inauguration so the two of them could be inaugurated in their roles at the same time.
Wow.
And as best we can tell, at that time, Carthage was then the third institution in the country that wasn't all women to have a woman as the senior non-presidential administrator. So it's a little bit technical there, but that was a very unusual thing at the time. And so this is also something we want to celebrate this year. She became acting president. Morris Wee's presidency did not last long. And so within about 6 months of her arrival, he departed and she became acting president.
Wow.
And then she was that acting president before she took a position at McCormick Seminary. And that was when Harold Lentz came. So to put it in perspective for those who know the Lentz presidency.
Wow. I didn't know that story at all. That's really, really fascinating. And it's interesting, you're making this distinction that is probably important for us to make, which is that there were schools back then with all women, and there were schools back then, of course, with all men, many more of the latter than the former. And then there were a few schools where it was the two of them together. And it's kind of interesting to think back to, in 1870, what that would have felt like and how groundbreaking or revolutionary that, at least in some places, might have felt for men and women to be in that kind of a classroom together. And one wonders just what that experience was like.
That's why being out there in what was not too long before that called the Far West in Illinois.
Yeah, that's right. Back on the frontier. Cameron Swallow, what thoughts have been kind of going through your mind as you've been thinking about this long, important history of women at Carthage and women and their place in higher education?
Well, Greg, I my thoughts coming up on this homecoming have really focused more on the personal, selfish as that may sound. it's my first homecoming to feel as if I'm not going to be a poser and a sham and welcoming people home to Carthage, because I feel like I belong here too now. Right. And so for anyone who's known about my Welcome Home Tour blog that I was keeping in the first couple of years, I was asking students to show me special places in Kenosha, and some faculty and alumni began to add to that list. And I went to had a tour of my new hometown, but I'm ending that tour now. Because you don't go on tour when you're at home, right?
Right, right.
So my own homecoming is sort of coinciding with this year's homecoming, and I'm pleased and happy to take my place in this long array of Carthage women who belong at Carthage.
I like that. I like that very, very much. I'm sure that makes this celebration feel entirely different than those first couple where Carthage was still a new and unfamiliar and probably in some ways an intimidating place, and now it's home. Very good. We're glad you're home. So let's talk through some of what's going to be going on this weekend at Carthage. We've already mentioned this special celebration, 7 p.m. on Friday night, celebrating 150 years of women at Carthage. There's a number of other things going on that are going to be of interest, although primarily to alumni from Carthage, including various alumni breakfasts and meals. And it looks like, in a big way, we're welcoming back those who graduated 50 years ago for a big celebratory dinner. Maybe you want to say a word about the homecoming concert, which is going to be on Saturday night, which we hope a lot of our listeners will want to take in.
Yes. So we'll have the wind orchestra, the alumni band, and we'll have the Carthage Choir with a wonderful concert of music. And we will have several alumni, if we use the Latin, A-L-U-M-N-A-E. This is a little bit difficult to remember to use the feminine ending when you're talking about only women.
Right.
But we have several alumni who are coming back, three women, one as a guest conductor, and two as soloists to be with the wind orchestra. And we're also very excited that we will have a premiere of a piece written by Judy Bozzone, and she will be in attendance. The piece is called Rise Up. And it is based on Matthew 5:41, when Jesus asks a little girl to rise up. And this is interpreted as rising up to live a full life to her full potential. And so that is a connection with 150 years of Carthage women.
Right. And my understanding is that that's just the first of several premieres that will occur over the course of this school year of new works by women composers as part of this long celebration. We certainly want to remind people as well that the wonderful play A Doll's House Part 2, which opened last weekend, is going to also be performed over the course of this weekend. So a couple of different important fine arts offerings that people might want to take in. I know, President Swallow, you wanted to mention something about a new Black alumni network that has been created and that you are anxious to foster. Tell us more about that.
Sure. This homecoming will be the inaugural meeting of the Wigan-Kennebrew Black Alumni Network. And this is something that alumni have put together in the past year or two. And we're very excited that for this homecoming, we have over 100 folks registered to be part of those events. That includes alumni from different, generations, students. And it's really first and foremost a time for alumni and students to network, get to know each other, understand opportunities, which of course is more and more what we are focused on with our new Aspire program. And so all of this fits very neatly together. But it is the first time that we've had this reunion, and we're excited to see it continue into the future.
Very good. There's another event that happens, I think, Friday around noon that involves the Aspire Center as well and some kind of event called Building Your Story. And this would be a good time for you not only to mention that, if you like, anything about that, but also maybe a word about the Aspire Center, because I know it is something that excites you very, very much and is a really important part of the college's role now in educating its students.
Well, that's right, Greg. We have committed, starting this year with this year's first-year class, that all of our students, regardless of major, will be enrolled in a comprehensive career development program that will start really from day one. As soon as they are enrolling for classes, they will be sitting down with a career counselor that we call a career specialist to think about what their future would be, what might match their personality, what preparation they would need, and how the 4 years that they will have at Carthage, which may seem long, but in other ways can be quite short, can make sure that they are as fully prepared as possible to be a contributor when they leave. And so we've been delighted to see the launch of this fall. The Aspire Conference, which was a couple of weekends ago, had 80 different events, 30 different speakers, alumni and friends, keynoted by Bill Blagg, a class of 02 graduate, who told his own story. And to this is to your point, that students need to be able to tell their story, what motivates them, why they might be suited to a particular position, and tell it relatively quickly. Well, we all hear about elevator speeches. If it's going to take you 5 minutes to explain, you may not have held the listener's attention just that long. But that was really an amazing set of events. And it was set up as a professional conference. People wore name tags. There was a a question about what the environment is when students go out. And so rather than have that environment be, you know, a career fair elsewhere, let's not call it a career fair. Let's call it a professional conference. People tend to wear name tags. There are little lanyards. You register. You go to different functions. There are receptions. And so all of this is just fabulous experience for our students.
Yeah. So this first Aspire conference, it sounds like, went very, very well.
Yes, yes. I loved Bill Blagg's story. He did do some magic tricks alongside telling his story, so I won't try to rehearse those on the radio. But he talked about how he had won a national competition in magic before he had come to Carthage. And his sophomore year, he thought, you know, it's time for me to get out on the road and really sort of make my name. He borrowed $25,000, a lot of money. And he went to Elkhorn, Indiana for his first show, and he entered through the curtains, and there were 10 people in the audience. And then he went to another Indiana town, and the same thing happened. And he came back that weekend realizing that he had lost his $25,000 and his grand plan was falling apart. And it was in conversation with Carthage faculty and staff that convinced him that, Bill, the problem is not the magic. But the problem is that you have to understand how to do this from a business perspective.
Right.
You can lose a lot of money very quickly. And so it was a great story for him to acknowledge his own vulnerability and his learning around that. And now he's a professional musician, visits 100 events a year, and he really credits Carthage with helping him along the way, which is what the Aspire program is all about.
Right. Magic but without marketing is not really magic, I guess. So.
That would be real magic.
Yeah, that's a great story. I want to just mention parenthetically that during the Aspire conference, one of the visitors was a recent grad named Matt Tomey, who is on the staff of the Sacramento Kings. And I convinced him to swing by the radio station, and we recorded an interview that will air next week where he talks about the work that he's doing with Sacramento Kings. But he was one of a number of alums invited back for that exciting event. Something else that gained some headlines for Carthage was an announcement a few weeks ago about a change in the way that Carthage, in a sense, charges for the education that it provides to its students. So I'm very excited for this opportunity to hear directly from you about some of the conversations that that occurred behind the scenes before this decision was made to make this move regarding Carthage and what it charges for tuition. So maybe you would set the scene for us.
Sure. Well, we really want to be committed to honest and transparent and straightforward pricing. And the more we looked at what was happening, and this just comes right through in conversations I'll have with parents when they drop their students off, as happened this fall. They say it just seemed impossible to come to Carthage. There's some mystery about it. So I talked to two parents who let me know that Carthage had not been on their list. It seemed impossible, and it was only after lots of conversations that they came to understand that the financial aid that would be provided would be sufficient, that it would make this an excellent choice for their family. And then they've been delighted once they made that choice. But when you think about how many conversations it took, then you think about how many people for whom Carthage would be a great fit. We have some fabulous opportunities, but students and parents are just scared away by the sticker price. And that really is it. It's just the sticker price. We've been giving more and more financial aid. The tuition that a family would pay on average over 4 years now is about what it was 10 years ago. So that's a real tribute to a growth in a financial aid program. But how much of that is visible when the sticker price, you know, all in, looks like it's going to be approaching $60,000? Seems impossible.
And I should just jump in, and you're using the word sticker price, I think, very specifically. So that sticker price affixed to the side of a car, typically at a car dealership, is not the amount you typically pay.
No, not at all. So nearly 100% of Carthage students receive financial aid in very significant amounts. And of course, that depends on their academic profile, their family situation financially, income of the family, the wealth of the family. Families with more resources tend to pay more. Families with fewer resources pay less. And it is a very individualized financial aid determination. But all of that is just going to be pointless if somebody is not considering Carthage because they think, oh, there's just no way. There's no way I could pay close to $60,000, which for nearly every family is absolutely true. There is no way.
Right.
That's just not in the cards.
So that huge number, the sticker price, as you called it, in your mind, that was causing way too many people to just sort of slam the door and not consider Carthage even a little bit, not even for a moment, seriously consider it as a possibility.
That's right. We reviewed some research by the national loan provider Sallie Mae that suggested that 2/3 of families rule out colleges on sticker price alone.
Hmm.
That's a lot of families. And so we are contributing to a situation where some families are not considering college or not considering how accessible college is simply by having a price that is so high. And so we were very excited to do some planning. I'd say the planning started sort of a germ of an idea in February. I was thinking about whether to do this, whether it would be the right moment. And then things got going more seriously by May, where I thought this might be just the moment, but I wasn't sure precisely how it would be executed. And then we had a task force looking at it this summer. And we determined that this would be just the right time to do it. That would be just the right time for Carthage. And after a board vote in August, then we got on with all the planning. As you can imagine, there's a lot of training that has to happen with financial aid counselors to explain this. Our publications and materials for marketing and other purposes had to change. And we were all very excited for the rollout in September.
Hmm. I'm curious what conversations occurred about how to frame this, because it is the kind of thing that could be trumpeted in such a way that would actually, in a sense, confuse people or lead them to jump to conclusions that they shouldn't be jumping to. And I imagine that in and of itself was really tricky, how to not only the matter of those who have to directly talk to students, but how is this news going to be shared with the world? I imagine that was not a simple matter.
No, not a simple matter. But the story, once we clarified it and thought about what we could or should say, was really quite simple, that Carthage is thriving. We had our largest first-year class last year. We have new programs coming online, the Aspire program as just one example. And we don't want students to miss out on these tremendous opportunities because they're getting scared away by the sticker price. And so that was really it, plain and simple. And so you're right. We don't want that story to get complicated. And I'm a mathematician. I know that things can get really complicated if you put too many charts and numbers and cite all the statistics and the research. But that was really it, a more transparent and straightforward pricing model. And we acknowledged when we had the interview with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that there had been an idea that higher and higher sticker price was sufficient for families to understand which schools had high quality. Well, that seems reasonable up to a point. On that model, you might say, okay, well, our sticker price shouldn't be 50 or 60. It should be 100 or 500, or maybe it should be $1 million. And then we'll say, oh, but you get lots of financial aid. So we thought that idea kind of run its course, this high tuition, high discount model, and that it was time to step back, and that there were limits, and families had lots of ways to understand whether a college was of high quality, apart from the sticker price. And in fact, we had gotten to the point where it was doing the reverse. It was pushing families away rather than helping them consider whether Carthage was the right fit for them.
Right. This move is being made at a point in time when there is a fairly wide swath of the population, and maybe that swath has been there a long time, but it feels like we're more aware of it. But there is, in a certain sector of the population, kind of a wariness about the whole world of higher education and kind of a suspicion of what is that all about and is it worth it and this and that. Did that figure at all into Carthage's calculations to do this, that you want more and more people to have, in a sense, a warmer and more appreciative attitude about what higher education is and what it offers? Or is that not really part of this equation?
Absolutely, Greg. There's just an incredible amount of skepticism now around post-secondary education. People look at rising student debt levels. They look at the fact that not all students graduate. They're concerned about how much students make in the first job after graduation. And a a lot of this is quite understandable given that families are taking out some debt for college or have had to save. And when you look at some of the very high sticker prices, it can seem simply impossible. And so, yes, that's absolutely part of our thinking. We want to make the process for Carthage as simple and direct as possible, to remove all the obstacles that can get in the way. We don't want any of this to be opaque. When families come on campus, they get a great idea of what we offer and how tremendous it is. But when they're sitting at home before they've come, when they're receiving mail from all kinds of colleges, it's very hard to distinguish all that. So I would say our Aspire program is part of reaching out to families and confirming for them that over 4 years their children will get a fabulous career development opportunity. And this is just on top of a fabulous liberal arts experience with over 50 majors that we've been providing. And I would say that those days, some of you on the radio may remember this, that it used to be that you would apply to a college and say, well, I'd like to come. And there'd be all these forms, and they'd say, well, send us a transcript, write all these essays, send us a tax form, and in 9 months we'll get back to you with what we think you might pay. And those days are just over.
Right. Thank the Lord. For those of you just joining us, we're speaking with John Swallow and with Cameron Swallow, so president and first lady of Carthage College, and just now talking about the big announcement that, of course, many of you heard of from a few weeks ago, that Carthage was shifting to a much more transparent model in terms of what a Carthage education costs. And we are also talking today on the eve of yet another homecoming, a homecoming which also is a kickoff for what is actually a year-long celebration of 150 years of women at Carthage. So let's circle back to that, remind people, first of all, that there is a celebration of that this Friday night as part of the homecoming kickoff, and that is an event at Seaford Chapel, 7 o'clock, open to the entire community, open to the public, and we hope a lot of people will come and be part of that. Cameron Swallow, what can you tell us about some of the other ways in which this remarkable milestone is going to be celebrated in the coming months?
Mm-hmm. Well, I love that this celebration is not going to be one and done in a single day of celebration. We're imagining a year of celebrating the achievement of 150 years of coeducation, which, as we talked about earlier, is remarkable in America's history. And a lot of work and preparation and thought have gone into the structure of how that year is going to be managed. So the Institutional Advancement Office has created this structure of 5 different committees, an academic committee for all the lectures and plays and musical performances and putting everything in this theme that is either written by women or involves the performances of women, etc. And then there are other committees in the community, one involving alumni and parents, one involving career development and networking, involving the Aspire connections, one involving community connections. And I'm particularly involved with that one. And we have several exciting projects through the year, from the Readers or Leaders in United Way event in the spring, to creating a horticulture walk that brings people to visit our campus who might not already know it, to sponsoring a bike race with professional female athletes and school children doing Girls on the Run using our track. And so the kickoff is this weekend is exactly that. It's just a kickoff for a whole year of celebration of Carthage's women in the community. And I do want to pause and be careful about saying it's not women at the expense of anybody else. It's the idea that it's women alongside, women as equal companions and co-workers, both at school and in the community. And that's what Carthage has had such remarkable success doing ever since 1870.
Right. Well, and it's And it's just interesting how the various questions sort of come up as you just think about something that you don't always stop to think about. And for instance, a couple summers ago, or was it last summer? I think it was a year ago. They had a big event at Carthage that was exploring women's suffrage movements throughout the Americas, not just the United States of America, but how did that unfold in Central America and in South America? And when did women receive the right to vote in these various countries? And what was that path like in these different cultures with their own particular histories? And that's a question that had never even dawned on me. It just, you just sort of feel like history swings with this kind of inevitability. And that's not the way it is at all, actually. And that in each and every case, it was a struggle. And who was part of that struggle and why is an endlessly fascinating story. So it sounds like this will be a year that will highlight a whole lot of stories that most of us have never really considered before.
And it's linked to that last summer's event also. That was Stephanie Mitchell's seminar with sponsored by the NEH grant. And Stephanie Mitchell will be, our professor of history, will be interviewing Nancy Tate, who comes as the Woodrow Wilson Fellow at the end of this month. So that's one of the early parts of the year of celebrating 150 years of women at Carthage. Nancy Tate will be here for a week, and she will be interviewed publicly by Stephanie Mitchell, I think the Tuesday night of the last week of October.
Fantastic.
Yeah, October 29th. So she's the former executive director of the League of Women Voters, and she's the co-chair of the National 2020 Women's Suffrage Celebration. So we're just delighted that she could come to Carthage this year.
Very good. Cameron Swallow, what do you think in the year 2019 all of this should mean? That is, once upon a time, it was remarkable for a woman just to enroll in a college class. And now it isn't remarkable at all. And right now there's, I'm pretty sure, more women than men who are enrolled at Carthage right now as students. So it just seems like we are living in such a different era now, in which the significance of gender and how we approach gender and talk about it is profoundly different from what it used to be. Does that, in a sense, complicate this in terms of how we think about this celebration and the terms we use and the stories that we tell, or not particularly?
Oh, I don't feel as if that question's complicated, Greg. One of the things that's happening on Friday night is we're encouraging women who are current students and who are alumni to go into a story collection recording booth and give their answer to the single question, what is your hope for future Carthage women? And I'm going to spoiler alert right here. My answer to that question is, I hope future Carthage women have their minds and hearts and souls expanded by the education that they receive at Carthage, and that they always remember as graduates that Carthage was the place where they had their minds and hearts and souls expanded. And then I also hope that the recognition that you don't need the word women in either one of those sentences to make them true. You know, you could just say, I hope this for all Carthage students. The fact that the word women is incidental just becomes more and more part of the future, right? That's the path I hope that we are on. And after having women alongside men for 150 years, may we hope that in the future that true equality is realized by us not having to specify that we hope women have this experience, because we hope all students have this experience.
Absolutely. And it becomes something that we have a right to expect and work to preserve. Very good. Very well put. In our last couple of minutes, President Swallow, is there anything you want to tell our listeners about the college campus? Anything that is new and different and exciting, or anything about Carthage itself that you are hard at work on, you and your colleagues in administration?
Well, I'd say we're so excited that we have this event coming up, really as part of a growing series of events where Carthage seeks to be connected and make a difference in Kenosha, in Racine, and in southeastern Wisconsin, and really across the Midwest. It's been very important to me that we continue to educate expansively, and that will mean new programs, not least our three new sports, in case you haven't heard.
Oh, yeah.
We have women's bowling coming online next year. We're bringing back men's wrestling, and then we're also adding women's wrestling. We want to be a partner to organizations locally, and we want to be the college of choice for lots of families from the Milwaukee to Chicago corridor and beyond. All of these things are very important to me because they really do reflect Carthage's history, and that's really part of this 150-year celebration. At least in 1870 and beyond, Carthage didn't define itself by what it wouldn't do. It didn't define itself by saying we would only educate men or we would only educate with certain classes in certain subjects, but it really had an openness to it. So in 1870, women were enrolled. There were business classes alongside the classics, business classes that helped Bill Blagg, class of 02. Mm-hmm. Carthage enrolled students of color in the 1940s before waiting for the civil rights controversies to raise the question. Carthage added nursing just a few years ago, and it's that openness. How can Carthage serve people who want to be educated? It's a very basic principle, and that's what I'm most delighted about.
Mm. Very well put. A nice note on which to end this conversation. And again, we want to remind people that there are all kinds of exciting events going on this weekend for Carthage's homecoming, including the celebration of 150 years of Women at Carthage, Friday night, 7 p.m. in Siebert Chapel, with the celebration to continue in the library after. Saturday, a big full day that includes the homecoming parade at 11 in the morning and the football game at 1. We wish them well. And the homecoming concert Saturday evening, 7 p.m. in Siebert Chapel, featuring, among other groups, the Carthage Choir and the Wind Orchestra and alumni band, and the world premiere of a brand new work by one of three women composers commissioned for new works for this celebratory year. So the work Rise Up by Judy Bozzoni, receiving its world premiere Saturday evening. And if you want more information on anything that we have talked about involving homecoming, you can go to the Carthage website, carthage.edu, and click on the link called The Bridge, and there you find all kinds of news about homecoming and everything else related to Carthage. Dr. John Swallow, Cameron Swallow, I so appreciate you joining me today on the morning show to talk about all of this, and especially about this year-long celebration of women at Carthage. It's been great to have this conversation, and very best wishes to you.
Thanks for letting us be on your show, Greg.
Tomorrow on the morning show, I look forward to sharing with you the interview I've recorded with renowned cellist Julian Schwartz, who happens to be the son of Gerard Schwartz, the longtime conductor of the Seattle Symphony. Cellist Julian Schwartz is the featured soloist this Saturday night with the Kenosha Symphony Orchestra as they begin their 80th anniversary season. Also on tomorrow's program, we are going to be hearing from Barb Farrar, who is the director of the LGBT Center of Southeastern Wisconsin, celebrating their 10th anniversary. That's tomorrow. And on Friday's morning show, we'll be speaking with Dr. Gerald Mast, who is an associate professor of political science at Carthage College. And, of course, there are all kinds of things to talk about with Professor Mast. What an interesting time to be in the business of political science. That's on Friday's morning show. We want to remind you that the morning show is now available as a podcast. And you can subscribe via Spotify, Apple Podcast, or Google Podcast. Be sure